Got an opinion? Pick up the phone and call. The lines are open at 503-250-1080 or toll-free 1-800-727-5955. Rick Emerson on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
All right, coming up here in just a few moments, we got TV critic Peter Carlin from The Oregonian going to join us. We got more with Tim Riley in just a second. In Forest Grove, Dave, you're on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK. What's up, man?
Hey, Rick, I got a couple little things. First off, some Paris Hilton music.
Yes.
You know UTFO, right?
Yeah, UTFO, old school.
Way old school. Hey, I found a tape. How about Master Baby?
You know, I had my friend Brian who was really, really into those guys. And I got to say, the number of UTFO songs I know, I can count on like two fingers. I was always listening to this band. There was this band called Bobby Jimmy and the Critters.
Huh?
And Bobby Jimmy and the Critters were another sort of novelty rap band. They did sort of parody songs. And so that was kind of where I fell down there. But what's it called? Master Baby?
Master Baby.
Master Baby. Yeah, because I've been unable to find any songs that have the appropriate sort of I spent last night in Paris lyrics.
Yeah, so and one other thing. Have you been watching the Clone Wars snippets on Cartoon Network?
I've seen the ads for it, and I've TiVo'd a bunch of the small, you know, the little
right.
installments, but I haven't watched any of them yet. I'm going to try to get a big marathon
tonight
this weekend.
Tonight they're doing 1 through 10.
What time? Do you know what time it starts?
7:30 is what they said.
7:30.
It's been great. It's
Excellent.
Actually been really good.
So. It's not what's-his-name, Genndy Tartakovsky or whatever, is it? Who is it that's
Samurai
doing those?
Jack.
The guy who did Samurai Jack.
Yeah, and it's actually really cool.
All right, excellent. Well done. Thank you for the heads up. There you go. That's David Forrest Grove. All right, in just a moment, we got Peter Carlin from The Oregonian. This is Tim Riley in the KFTK Newsroom.
And now, it's not just news. It's news with Tim Riley. Live from the newsroom of Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
A Vancouver man will spend 15 years in prison for trying to kill his pregnant girlfriend with a claw hammer. Ramon Sturgis found guilty of attempted murder and kidnapping. He broke into the woman's house, beat her in the head with a hammer, and then trapped her in her bedroom. She jumped out the window by cutting a window screen.
Hold on. I'm what? Matt's yelling at me. I'm supposed to tell Peter that hello and I'll be with him. Peter, I'll be with you right after the news segment. Just so you know.
All right.
I'm sorry, so he beat someone with a claw hammer.
Yeah, his girlfriend.
Why is it always a claw hammer? Why doesn't anybody just cut out the middleman and go with the sledge?
As opposed to ball peen.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Ball peen's just sort of a wounding implement.
Well, she'll be okay. Hotel heiress turned homemade porn star Paris Hilton
turned
will make...
Ho. Hotel heiress just turned ho heiress.
I mean, Paris Hilton will make her first pro-scandal TV appearance on the David Letterman show. Oh, wait a minute. Hotel heiress turned homemade porn star Paris Hilton will not appear on the late show with David Letterman.
Like that just in?
Yes. Paris has canceled all appearances because of the controversy, not just Letterman.
Okay.
But someone in the Hilton camp should call Letterman's staff because, according to a spokesman with the show, quote, we have not yet received an official word that Hilton is canceled, unquote.
All right.
Yesterday, a major PR campaign was launched to promote Hilton's first appearance on the show next Wednesday. A spokesman goes on to say Hilton is going to talk to Letterman about her new reality show, Simple Life, premiering December 2nd on Fox.
I am so excited for that.
It should also be noted that Paris Hilton is in the Cat in the Hat film that comes out today. She has a cameo, because just like we all remember it in the Dr. Seuss book, there's a scene at a rave club, because, you know, that's how Seuss envisioned it. And apparently Paris Hilton makes some sort of a walk-on, but that's still, so just wait and get it off the internet. Don't give money to that sort of a thing.
Then we have the second of two SUNY Maritime College students who slammed into a bridge while riding atop an elevated subway in the Bronx have died. Brian Hutchstetter was critically injured when his head hit a bridge. They did everything they could, said the hospital. He and another classmate were riding on the northbound 6th train after night in Greenwich Village with two classmates. They climbed onto the back cars and were surfing as they collided with a steel girder on a bridge. One died of a fractured skull.
Yeah.
That's that.
Let's all weep for the loss of humanity there.
Yeah. Former Nevada bassist Chris Novoselic is considering a run for Lieutenant Governor of Washington State. He was the founder of the grunge band and has most recently been a Democratic activist. If he chose to throw his hat into the ring, he could face off against Lieutenant Governor Brad Owen, a two-term incumbent. He tells Seattle Times he's been talking to party leaders and is seriously considering challenging Owen for the job. He said he doesn't want to go through 2004 as a spectator.
Chris Novoselic is sort of the Joyce DeWitt of Nirvana. He's like the guy that he's the and the rest. He's the guy that nobody's ever going to remember.
And, well, that's it for now.
All right.
I'm Tim Rutt.
All right. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show with a heart full of hate and a head full of snakes, Oregonian TV critic and all-around good guy, Peter Carlin. How are you, my friend?
Hello, I'm fine.
So we missed you last Friday on this very fine radio program.
I was in Palm Springs, California.
Doing what?
I was at a convention of public TV programmers.
Oh, I see. Do they get your input and insights on things? Or?
No, I kept my big fat mouth shut.
All right.
And took notes.
All right. We got a whole huge stack and pile of things to get to. I think the last time you were here, we'd already talked about everything being canceled, about all the good shows being taken away by one way. And Arrested Development continues to be good, but I got to tell you, man, Arrested Development is so good that I've just sort of already made peace within myself that it's not going to last.
I know the feeling. I keep hearing, though, that Fox is determined to stick with it, and maybe because it comes from such powerful people, the Ron Howard, Brian Grazer.
Didn't save Sports Night, you know. That's the same thing.
Yeah, I know, but that lasted a couple of years, right?
It did. It was on two seasons.
So there you go, which is better than, like, your Andy Richter show or whatever that lasts, like, 12 weeks before they yank it.
Yeah. Did you see that they're bringing, there's now serious talk that they're going to bring back, Fox is going to bring back Family Guy. We had the story yesterday. According to the AP, Fox is in serious discussions to bring back Family Guy with 35 new episodes based on two things. Based upon the DVD sales, it's apparently the fastest selling television program on DVD, surpassing even The Simpsons, and it continues to get the highest ratings of any show on the Cartoon Network. And its nightly airings at 11:30. So based on that, Fox is now, I guess, they're willing to admit that they made a mistake by bouncing it all over the schedule where nobody was going to be able to find it.
Mm-hmm.
And they may actually be bringing it back, which bodes well, you know, maybe for other prematurely canceled shows that end up doing really well on DVD.
Yeah, possibly, except I think it's a lot easier to come back with a cartoon than it is to reassemble an entire cast of living human beings. You know, I mean, you can always, I think it's a lot easier to kind of, like, switch voice talent in and out. But anyway, that's just my surface take.
Probably. Are you, do you collect the stuff on, do you get the TV shows on DVD?
Every so often, yeah. They send, stuff gets sent around to me.
Oh, see, so you don't actually have to buy anything. You just get the stuff that's sort of comped to you.
Well, there is that. I do buy stuff on occasion, though.
Yeah, see, I do this thing. It's like I was walking through Fred Meyer the other day, and I was in the electronics department looking for something or other, and there was that thing where it catches your eye, you know, the West Wing, all, you know, the complete first season, now on DVD, and I hold it in my hands, and I sit there, and I just vacillate for 5 full minutes about whether to buy it, whether to not buy it. They've just totally found the chink in my psychic armor.
The thing about West Wing is that I've found it at its best to be a thoroughly engaging hour that I never have to see again.
Oh.
That's like I watch it, I enjoy it, and then it's gone. I never think about it. Whereas, like, The Sopranos, I can watch and rewatch time and again. And to some extent, you know, like 6 Feet Under or, you know, there are a few other shows. But in terms of that really making the big impact where I'm thinking about it, I'm so engaged, I want to go back and watch it again, I never had that feeling about The West Wing.
What the hell is going on with 6 Feet Under? When is that thing even going to be back?
Why are you even, I mean, that's what people say. But look, when did it begin? It began in March. When did it come back a year later? In March. When's it coming back this year?
It's one of those conversations.
Let me get back to you on that one.
It's one of those. You're just going to tell me to shut the hell up.
Well, it's like, but that's the thing. There's some shows, that the groovy thing about I don't mean to come off sounding. I had a lot of coffee after lunch, so I'm a little on edge.
Yeah.
So don't take it personal.
Okay.
This ain't about you. It's about me, baby.
All right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's me.
Okay.
There's certain shows, the cool thing about that, about the cable model, which I kind of like, I mean, it requires a certain amount of patience, I'm sorry, you're going to get 13 episodes, not like 22 or 24. They're not going to be going on like all fall, winter, spring. They're going to be like in a specific season. But the good news is those shows are going to be extra good and extra worth waiting for. And maybe, if you're lucky, you know, during the spring you get 6 Feet Under in the Shield. In the fall you get, like, some other cool show, like maybe The Sopranos, though there's going to be kind of I think winter and spring are going to be TV-centric times for all of us because we're going to have The Shield, The Sopranos, and I believe 6 Feet Under at the same time. I may be wrong about that. HBO, I think if they're smart, they're going to have The Sopranos and then 6 Feet Under, so... You know, but there's 13 weeks and 13 weeks, and Curb Your Enthusiasm, I think they tend to have at the same time as The Sopranos.
Well, that was going to be my only request, is that they try to break it, like I think they did for the longest time, where they had the Chris Rock show and Dennis Miller, and they alternated. So when one wasn't on, the other was. But see, now I'm in this whole man, I'm in the tall grass. I'm in the weeds. There's nothing here.
Well, you know, there's it is kind of, this is sort of a weird thing. You got your Arrested Development. That's worth seeking out and watching. The Office on BBC America, though, I think that was only a 6-week season, and that's over already. But, you know, there's stuff brewing around on the cable here and there. But in terms of those really cool appointment TV style shows, Arrested Development and The Daily Show. I think The Daily Show is really worth seeking out night after night after night.
The Daily Show is really good. In fact, it's so good that it's. I mean, on the one hand, it only gets away with the stuff it gets away with because it's on cable. But on the other hand, by dint of that, it's seen by, I think, vastly fewer people than otherwise really should be exposed to it.
It's a great show. It's a fantastic show. It's way funnier than anything else on late night these days.
It's phenomenal. I mean, the fact that they can churn and that they can do it on a daily basis.
I know.
I mean, you would think that they would suffer some sort of. I don't even know what kind of turnover they got in the writing staff, because the burnout you think that they would come with.
Yeah.
You know, everybody in SNL talks about putting together this, you know, this topical show that's 90 minutes, but you know the Daily Show
guys are lame ass, man. Those SNL people.
The Daily Show guys are doing 2.5 hours every night.
I know, and you know what?
They don't have
they are so on top of their game.
Yeah.
And Jon Stewart is so hot right now. It's just unfathomable the quality that they can do night after night after night.
And the show took such a huge leap from when what's his name, Kilbourne, was doing it.
That I mean, no, he's a
tool.
He is a moderately talented individual, from what I can see.
It's true. Hey, I got to ask you about Michael Jackson because you're a pundit, and that's what pundits do. They pontificate about people like Michael Jackson.
Sure. It's, you know, the thing that you know, Michael, I kind of feel sorry for him. I mean, I feel sorry for Michael because I feel like the guy was almost certainly abused. I think it's demonstrable that the guy was abused in his own childhood in one way, shape, or form.
Well, his dad, Joseph Jackson, I think his name is, copped to it this week, copped to doing everything but horsewhipping him, I think. You know,
Yes, he copped that stuff. And I think also the whole, like, you are scarily talented, and so you will do this one thing. You will not have a normal boyhood. You will do this other thing, which, you know, maybe to the betterment of the culture, because, yeah, the guy is amazing, you know, an amazing performer, and it was a joy to watch him for many, many years. But then you get to this point where, you know, starting around Thriller, when he became so super famous and began to get kind of super weird, but as long as he sold records, the culture was willing to just sort of like shrug and look away when he began to do ugly stuff and seem like such, you know, the screaming whack job that he is. And then you get to the point where it's clear that he probably almost certainly is engaging in very disturbing relationships with young children, not his own. And it's like, you know, it's like last year on TV in February when they were doing like special after special after special sort of, you know, playing off of this. It just seems at some point people have to say, you know, we can't play this game anymore. We cannot be a part of this guy's show. This guy's show is going off the air. But nobody really seemed to be willing to do that. And one way, shape, or form, or the other, people are been taking advantage of his weirdness and making showbiz hay out of it. And I just think it's kind of unsettling, and it says bad things about the culture, at large.
Well, it does seem like it's one of those things where, I mean, you know, we were talking about this earlier this week, that obviously the more famous you are, I mean, this is sort of axiomatic, that the more famous you are and the more artistic you are, people make certain indulgences for your bizarre and insane behavior. And I think at a certain point, he just had this worldview that he was just invulnerable.
And I should probably point out that I have absolutely no idea about the text of the charges currently against him and to what extent they're actually, you know, what the veracity is of them. It could be that he's being, you know, done in by some nefarious people who are just trying to squeeze, $10 million out of him.
Well, this prosecutor, from all the conventional wisdom is sort of the prosecutor has at least something, somewhat of a vendetta against him, because he apparently has never, his claims to the contrary, the word is that he's kind of never gotten over Jackson walking in 93.
Well, you know, but the other thing is, though, I mean, you got Jackson himself admitting, you know, saying on TV, boasting or whatever, last winter, that he sleeps with young children, not his own, and he thinks there's nothing at all, like, odd about that, but it's like, there's something very odd. It's like, I don't care if you're not diddling these guys. You're still, they're 12-year-old boys who you're not related to, and you're sleeping in bed with them? That just seems, that's so wrong, and he doesn't even begin to understand that.
Did you see the mugshot, the booking shot of him?
Oh, God, yeah. And the thing is, even if the guy is not, you know, abusing children one way, you know, in some way, just look at his face. There is something extremely wrong and bad with this guy. And, you know, even if he's only victimizing himself, we, you know, as a culture, we should not be a party to that.
That
should not be something that people want to, you know, that's the point at which people should just throw their hands up in the air and say, I really like Prince. You know, Prince is really, you know, a relatively, you know, stable guy. Let's listen to Prince.
The question about that mugshot, everybody talks about James Traficant. When Traficant went to prison, they took his hairpiece away from him. And when Robert Blake went to prison, you know, they wouldn't let him dye his hair anymore. And so the question is, you know, God, if, you know, Michael Jackson ends up in prison, what's he going to look like after a month in there? I mean, you got to, you know, you talk about a guy that is so completely and totally, you know, just in his own world of isolation. You got to wonder what's going to happen. I know you got a thing you got to do.
I got to do a thing.
Okay, but we're going to have you. You're going to be in studio with us next week.
Yeah.
All right, so next Friday, you will be in studio, and you're going to be bringing something. You have a musical project you're working on. You're going to bring that next week with you, right?
Yeah, it's going to be the world premiere.
All right, excellent. So we'll be world premiering the musical stylings of Peter Carlin
and
next Friday on the show.
Probably the world conclusion of my career.
It'll be opening and closing that night.
Yeah.
All right, you can read him in print in the Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com. There's Peter Carlin. We'll be back with more. Don't go anywhere.
From Portland, it's Rick Emerson, only on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
From the KOTK newsroom, here's your Northwest update.
Good afternoon, 225. I'm Tim Riley. Now through December 6th, all Goodyear tires are on sale. Plus, get up to $75 in cash and a mail-in rebate with the purchase of four selected Goodyear tires. Will Ferrell's take on a happy-go-lucky man in green tights is a huge hit with audiences, nabbing the number one spot at the box office. Talk about the funniness of a 6'3" man living with elves, Wolf. Will?
It seemed like it had the potential of being a funny juxtaposition of seeing this 6'3" human having to live in this world that where everything's 3 or 4 feet tall, and so it seemed like it would create and present a lot of comedic opportunity just in that alone.
You would think that would happen. Talk about the choice of Ed Asner for Santa Claus.
We talked about Santa Claus. Wouldn't it be great to have kind of a no-nonsense Santa who was a little bit streetwise and who kind of was like, listen, kid, let me tell you how it really is, you know, but yet still had that place within him that was very soft and sweet and could still be fatherly, and that was, we said, what about someone like Ed Asner?
What about someone like Ed Asner? So that the movie's now playing. It's called Elf. See it at a theater near you. Portland Metro forecast for this afternoon, chance of showers, and so at the 1,500-foot level. It'll be partly sunny by tomorrow afternoon. Tim Riley, KOTK News.
Rick Emerson, only from Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
All right, 503-250-1080 in Portland, 1-800-727-5955. Coming up here in just a moment, we got today's Top 5 with Clyde Lewis. Top 5 JFK conspiracies of all time. And we got a supplemental Geek Watch here. Here we got a small Geek Watch, small Snuff Watch. Neither of them really large enough to warrant their own opening and closing. But I will tell you this. Anybody know who's been confirmed? Well, who's been offered anyway the role of Lois Lane in the upcoming Superman movie?
Margot Kidder.
No. She could be. No, they should cast her as a villain, though. With the head shaving and whatnot.
Who's going to be the... Who's Superman?
I don't think they... Well, let's see.
The best one is George Reeves.
Wasn't it Christian Bale?
Well, Christian Bale and Brendan Fraser apparently is one of the leading contenders. Brendan Fraser is one of the actors up for the role of the superhero dubbed the Man of Steel. ComingSoon.net reports that...
Katie Holmes.
No, but that'd be... You know, anything with Katie Holmes. Katie Holmes playing the part of anything. Now, okay, I got it. Let's bring on Clyde here, first of all. Let's bring on Clyde Lewis from the best damn radio program you're ever going to hear. It's Ground Zero tonight, 10 to 1, Saturday, 10 to 1, Sunday, 8 to 10. Have you heard? Do you know?
No, I haven't heard.
Natalie Portman Wow. Has been offered the role of Lois Lane in the upcoming Superman movie, according to E! Entertainment. But it gets better. ComingSoon.net reports that Richard Donner, who directed Christopher Reeve in Superman, is replacing McGee, but the film's production has now been delayed till 2006. So there you go. So that
film has had so many problems getting made.
It's been cursed, man. Yeah. They haven't been able to do it forever.
Natalie Portman is Lois Lane.
We've got a minor snuff watch. Jonathan Brandis, the 27-year-old actor from TV's Sequest DSV, starring...
that's not what he was known from.
Roy Scheider was found dead in his apartment. He's known from what?
He was in Neverending Story Part 2. When I was younger, he was in every one of my magazines. Like, I'd rip his pictures out of my Bop magazine and tape it on the wall.
Yeah.
No, he was in Neverending Story Part 2. He was in Ladybugs with Rodney Dangerfield.
He was in Ride with the Devil, and he was apparently in Hearts War as well.
God, he finds an alley with a needle in his arm or something?
No, he snuffed himself, apparently. Killed himself in his apartment. Doesn't say how.
Now he's in Dirt Nap.
Just because
he's apparently got the leading role.
He's got the starring role.
He's not in the water anymore, my friends. He's now in the dirt. Oh, Sarah's hating me, right?
I'm seeing the look.
You are horrible people. It's that age gap, I guess.
I don't even know who he is.
Every girl my age knows who he was.
All right, Jonathan Brandis.
Yeah, we can always make him waterproof, bury him in Tupperware.
I'm not saying a damn thing. I'm just sitting right here.
And somebody can walk around and burp his corpse every once in a while.
Yeah. Well done. All right.
Burp his corpse? Shame on you.
All right. Well, we're sorry.
I'm in a bad
he's dead.
Mood today. I don't
Never
care.
Ending Story what 2. All right. Anyway. So he's Jonathan Brandis. So attention, 23-year-old girls. Jonathan Brandis
has ended.
He's dead. All right. It's 503-250 Tonetti in Portland. Let's roll it. It's today's. We don't? Do we not have the theme? All right. Well, we'll just have to go. We'll have to go without it because we gotta get it done. We gotta roll it. All right. So it is Friday. Here is your top five for Friday.
4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happy.
And that picture of Michael Jackson gets creepier every time I look at it. It looks like he's been left sitting on a radiator, you know, and he's just sort of melting like a bad candle. All right. Hey, you know the difference between Michael Jackson and a grocery bag?
What?
One is plastic and harmful for children, and the other is something you carry groceries in. Here's Tim Riley.
And it was 40 years ago tomorrow that a strange and shocking change in American life was begun. The killing of John F. Kennedy would pave the way for a bounty of puzzles, mysteries, and questions still unanswered. As we do in such times, we turn to the one man who can help make sense of this whole darn thing. These are the top five JFK conspiracy theories according to Clyde Lewis. At number five, the MOB.
The mob.
The MOB.
The mob did it.
All right.
And the reason why, I did this purposefully because I wanted to show that everything's connected in some other of all conspiracies. First of all, some people believe that mob boss Carlos Marcello headed up the group to kill Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy, JFK's brother, the attorney general, was cracking down on illegal dealings with organized crime. Now, the mob was ticked off about this because, of course, the mob was a big vote to get Kennedy in office when they elected him in 1960. So the mobsters rightfully felt betrayed, and Marcello specifically threatened to kill the president when he was in New Orleans. The threat came at a meeting shortly after he was deported by Robert Kennedy. So the mob was really pissed off at the Kennedys, and that's why a lot of people believe that the mob was the sole perpetrator or the sole
organizer. Well, not only that, but Sam Giancana helped get him elected.
Sure.
And then they responded by trying to deport him and put everybody in prison. So.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's why everybody thinks the mob may have been the culprit.
Number two, the CIA or FBI.
Are we doing these in reverse order?
No.
5-4. Yes, 5-4.
Okay. Number four.
This is the correct order.
CIA, FBI.
All right.
Kennedy made no friends with the CIA. It's no secret. CIA's motive seems to be much clearer because Kennedy was a threat to national security. A lot of people even believe that he was selling secrets to the Russians. They thought that he needed to be eliminated. Kennedy betrayed the CIA and the anti-Castro Cubans during the Bay of Pigs invasion by not delivering They're promised air support that they needed. This resulted in many of the invaders being killed, captured. It also resulted in the humiliation of the CIA. Kennedy fired Alan Dulles. And what's really interesting about that is that Dulles finally became the head of the Warren Commission, which is also a interwoven little web there. He also fired Chief Deputy Charles Cabell for bungling the Bay of Pigs invasion. Kennedy also promised to smash the CIA into thousands of pieces. Kennedy promised Khrushchev that there would be no further attempts to invade Cuba, and also Kennedy forcibly closed down American anti-Castro training centers. CIA links were there, too. And Kennedy entered into a nuclear test ban treaty with the Soviets, thereby confirming that he's being soft on communism, so they had to eliminate him.
Number three, Lee Harvey Oswald.
Of course, the lone nut that everybody says committed the crime. Of course, Oswald has every reason to be believed that he was involved. He, of course, was the official trigger man, they say. But he was eventually killed by Jack Ruby before he had a chance to testify.
Tim saw that. Tim saw it happen.
Yep. And there are also conspiracies surrounding Oswald. Some include Oswald being codenamed for King Lear. Actually, there's a point in King Lear where Oswald kills King, and there were many agents who looked like Oswald that carried this out in various places all over Dallas that day. In fact, after he was captured, he was transferred to the Dallas County Jail. Transfer was delayed an hour. He was then escorted in the basement of police headquarters, and if you remember, there was a horn that honked, and then Jack Ruby stepped out of the shadows and shot Lee Harvey Oswald in the stomach. And by the way, Ruby had ties to the mob.
And at number two, George H.W. Bush.
George Herbert Walker Bush, this is going to be a long one now. He denies that he was...
He wasn't even in office then.
No, he wasn't in office. But the thing about him was is that he was involved with the CIA. At least he denies he was involved with the CIA back then. But Bush was owner of Zapata Oil. The code name for the Bay of Pigs invasion was Operation Zapata. A Pentagon official named Colonel Fletcher Prouty was the man who secured two Navy ships for the operation. One was called the Houston, and the other was called the Barbara. Interesting, isn't it? Bush lived in Houston. He also had a wife named Barbara. The suspicion is that George H.W. Bush consulted with a friend named George Day Morenschild, and he was a rich Russian oil guy who lived in Texas when Lee Harvey Oswald settled there. He was friends with Oswald, and apparently probably served as a CIA control officer for Oswald. And he may have been the man who worked with Bush, who was a friend of Johnson, who worked with Jack Ruby, of course, and basically worked with the mob, and it had all
Is there anyone who didn't kill Kennedy?
That's the thing. It's the thing that's most important.
Is this like a murder on the Orient Express
it
thing?
Is.
Where
everybody had connections to Kennedy, and everybody wanted to see him dead. It's like if you screw with so many people, somebody in that group is going to want to kill. But they're all intertwined, so they basically work together in tandem to try and commit the crime. Now, the mastermind, we have the trigger men, we have the people who are connected. Like, for example, think about this. Who appointed George H.W. Bush to the CIA? Gerald Ford. Where was Gerald Ford? He was on the Warren Commission, the group that investigated the shooting of President Kennedy. And Nixon, he parted, who also, Nixon had connections to who? The mob. So it all just goes, it was just nuts.
This music is too slow.
I'm sorry.
Number one, Lyndon B. Johnson.
Once again,
mom's convinced that LBJ did it.
Lyndon B. Johnson, he had the opportunity, motive, and means to put together a plan to assassinate JFK. If he's not the mastermind, he certainly had control of investigations and findings of the Warren Commission, which, of course, leads to the cover-up, which, of course, leads to all sorts of rumors, such as when he was flying on the plane Dallas, he lifted the casket lid and shoved his penis right in the face of Kennedy.
Sorry, you had to hear that.
They say that he may have urinated on the corpse of Kennedy, which is another rumor.
Kids, don't.
But the idea here is that there was so much money invested in the war, there was so much money, and all the big names, if you look at all the names, they're all connected. Lyndon B. Johnson, George H.W. Bush, the mob, Carcello, Giancana, all these names seem to all be a part of it. And all the people that are involved all ended up getting cushy jobs. And just to show you just how weird it is, a year after the movie JFK was released, the figures that were involved in the JFK assassination, Richard Nixon, John Connolly, H.R. Haldeman, Frank Sturgis, Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, all coincidentally died after the movie JFK was released, a year after the movie was released, which is kind of strange.
There you go. Clyde Lewis from News at Ground Zero. We'll be back. Stay there.
Rick Emerson, only on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
You can't talk about shoving your penis into... Here's Sarah Dillon with the traffic.
Call now to join us, 503-250-1080 or 1-800-727-5955. Rick Emerson, only from Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
Hey, don't forget, coming up tomorrow, 800 Octane, along with 33 Countdown to Life, The Dead Unknown, playing at Meow Meow. Doors open at 7 p.m. It's $8. And also tomorrow night, 10 p.m. at DVA, which is up there on the Howell and 50th. The Altar Boys and Porch Honky, both fine bands. DBA tomorrow night, 10 p.m., just $5. You just get out there and support local music. Speaking of supporting local music, we want to welcome to the Rick Emerson Show here for something that we touched on early. We talked about this, actually, I don't know, a couple months ago, I guess. There was the OLCC, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, passed this absurd law some time back saying that you couldn't be, if you were an underage performer, in other words, if you were, you know, whatever, over the age of 18 but under the age of 21, there was a time when you were able to go in and you were able to perform. So if you're the 19-year-old bass player of some Portland rock band, you were allowed to be there in the capacity of a performer. You know, you weren't inside to get loaded. You were in there to do some sort of a job. And the OLCC came along and passed a law essentially forbidding anybody who fell into that 18, 19, 20-year-old category from being able to be inside any place where the OLCC had jurisdiction, where liquor was being served. But it looks like they may have actually screwed themselves right out of being able to enforce that law, which I know affects a lot of people, not just, you know, who would listen to the show, but who are in the, you know, Portland music community as well. We want to welcome Bruce Fife. He's the president of the American Federation of Musicians. Local 99 here in Portland works with a lot of guys who are in the Portland music scene. Bruce, how are you?
Good today.
Am I pretty accurately assessing that they passed this law that said if you were over 18 but under 21 and you were a performer, you couldn't be in the club or the bar?
Pretty much. It actually is anyone under 21, though. There are examples of players that are 16 that can get court orders that allow them to perform as long as their parents are present also. So it affects them also.
And the OLCC kind of shafted them, but it looks like that they did it. Is it true that they did it incorrectly?
That's right. They didn't file the paperwork like they're supposed to.
And so is the law going to be overturned, or is the law going to be changed? What's going to happen?
Well, what happened is they, as soon as they decided that they had to fix it, they passed a temporary order that put it back in place again, and now it has to come back up for a new vote again. But because they have to do that, the public gets to speak out and let them know how they feel about it.
And the OLCC is pretty widely disliked in this state because they're archaic and anachronistic in a lot of ways, not just because of this, but this affects, you know, we had a lot of people in the audience who are part of the Portland music community. They either support it or they've got family in it or they themselves are in it, and this really screws a lot of people.
Yeah, they're definitely the organization that people love to hate.
Absolutely. And so they've kind of done this inconvenient thing where the public hearing is happening. Rather than do it on a series of successive nights where people would be able to go, they've decided to do it all day long on Monday. So if you're unemployed or if you're some, you know,
or you're a musician.
Or you're a musician, you know, and you're just getting up at like noon, you're going to be able to go to this.
Right.
But if people want to go and they want to register their complaints and they want to let people know that the OLCC shouldn't be meddling with who can perform in a club and who can't. How's the best way to do that? What should they do?
Well, it starts at 10 a.m. on Monday, on the 24th, and we are hoping to have a big enough turnout that this can go all day long. The rules coordinator that runs this has actually scheduled the room for all day and into Tuesday, so she's kind of expecting a big turnout, and we'd love to have that. You know, so you can come at any time during the course of the day, and hopefully it will still be going. But obviously, the earlier you get there, the better.
Do people need to be prepared? They need to bring anything? Do they need to be a musician, or can they just be
somebody who, as a citizen, just shows up? It gives you a chance to rant and let them know how you feel about what they're doing to the work environment of musicians and entertainers in general.
All right. If people are interested in finding out more, especially about the American Federation of Musicians, it's AFM99.org. Is that right?
That's correct.
That's the American Federation of Musicians, Local 99, here in Portland, AFM99.org. And give the time and place one more time for the public hearing on Monday.
Monday, November 24th, 10 a.m. at the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. It's on McLaughlin Boulevard just before you get to Milwaukee, going south.
Excellent. Bruce Fife, President, American Federation of Musicians, Local 99. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you much.
All right, there you go. You can also, by the way, go to POMN.com. POMN.com for more information on this. Just click on the OLCC, find the OLCC banner on the right side. We'll be back to wrap it up. It's the Rick Emerson Show.
live from Portland, only on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
Rick Emerson, only from Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.
So Bill Clinton was the trigger man.
No, I didn't say that.
That's exactly... You heard
I didn't say that Bill... No,
did you hear Clyde just saying that he thinks Bill Clinton could have been the trigger man?
And Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Yeah, but she signed... Hillary signed some papers and Bill was driving a car or something.
No, I didn't say that.
You...
I didn't say that.
Sorry. You said...
Didn't say it.
No. I've got witnesses that...
I did not say that.
All right, sorry.
I did not say
that. Aren't the droids I'm looking for?
No, it's not the droids you're looking for. Right. I did not say that Hillary Clinton assassinated President Kennedy.
I never, no, but...
And I didn't say that Clinton assassinated President Kennedy.
You said, you just said you're like...
No, I said that, it was a guy from the Warren Commission, his name's Hale Boggs. He was a guy that said that the magic bullet theory was stupid.
Right.
And so what happens is he gets on a plane with a guy by the name of Nick Begich. I've interviewed his son many times on my show. It's out with Nick Begich Sr. They get on this plane and they go flying over Alaska. And the plane crashes. And they do not release any information about Boggs' death or Begich's death. So I do some searching and I figure out, guess who drove these guys to the airport?
Hmm.
William Jefferson Clinton. Young guy. So then I'm doing some more digging as I'm digging around, poking around as I normally do. And I find out who was the person who developed the case against Nixon in the Watergate scandal.
I don't know.
Hillary Rodham Clinton. Hillary Rodham at the time. She was one of the people that prepared the legal documents to try and frame Nixon. So these guys have been fighting wars amongst themselves for the longest time. And Kennedy, you know, they're all covering their tracks for Kennedy. Gerald Ford was appointed president of the United States. He never was voted for. Never. And Nixon, of course, was impeached, or he resigned, because of the crimes that he committed. So basically what it was is that after the Kennedy assassination, everybody was out to get everybody else. And you said that your dad thought Nixon did it.
No.
Well, Nixon was connected. Your mom thought that Johnson did it. Johnson probably was the mastermind because of all the problems with Vietnam. And so you look at this, and it's just a weird, intertwined conspiracy. The thing that's bothering me is, why are we talking about it 40 years later when a 40-year anniversary is kind of odd?
Well, we were talking about that during the break because they were especially this week because there's just so much other stuff. So are you going to be, so Ground Zero's coming up tonight, 10 to 1, Saturday,
yeah.
10 to 1, Sunday, 10 to 1. Are you doing any Kennedy stuff?
I may talk about Kennedy. I'm going to have open phones, I think, tonight. But later on Sunday, I'm bringing Dr. Larry Johns on again. And he wants to talk about the pseudo-prophecy that Ground Zero spews every week. He says that he's been following a lot of things that I've said. And he wants to talk about that. He wants to talk about when I kind of intimated, I never really said it directly, but I kind of intimated that President Bush's life may be in danger, kind of an assassination type thing. Maybe they're preparing us for this by giving us the Kennedy thing. John Hinckley Jr.'s in the news again. The idea of a king being imprisoned. It's kind of a strange little metaphoric exercise. And so, Bush is leaving England now. But, you know, I'm sure the reason why they had all that security is because there was a credible threat that was issued to the President of the United States and his life. So now we know that perhaps President Bush is in very big trouble and that this is just part parcel of us looking back at how a president was assassinated and how the country mourned over it. So I don't know what's going on.
It's Ground Zero tonight, 10 p.m. to 1 p.m. Listen to it with the lights off. It's the scariest of 3 hours of your life. Also, tomorrow night, 10 p.m. to 1 p.m. Sunday, 8 to 10. Coming up next week on the Rick Emerson Show, we got Clyde Lewis, of course, will be back for news at Ground Zero on Tuesday. Jen Lane from Barfly Magazine next week. Also on, what is it, Wednesday? Is it Wednesday that we have the Blender editor on, or is it a week?
Maybe. We haven't confirmed it yet, but that'll it'll actually be Wednesday, December 3rd.
All right. So we got coming up, in the near future, we got the Blender, music editor from Blender Magazine is going to be with us. Next Thursday, we'll be doing our annual Thanksgiving show. We have tofurkey, corn, cold beer, the stylings of Richard Nunn, and deep fried turkey. It's all coming up. We want to thank CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop, also Ed McCarthy in Atlanta today in Dallas, Clyde Lewis, Hillary Duff, Sean Hayes, Will Ferrell, Rick James, General Mark Kim at Don Rumsfeld, and your calls. The Rick Emerson Show is produced today and every day by the lovely Sarah Dillon for Hot Talk 1080 KOTK. In the newsroom, Tim Riley, executive producer, 1F Matt Peterson. Like us next, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show at 7, and Clyde Lewis with Ground Zero tonight at 10 p.m. Have a safe weekend. We'll see you Monday at noon. As always, don't let the bastards grind you down. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See you Monday. Bye.
Mr. Humberflu from Cosmopolis.
Live from Portland, it's Rick Emerson, only on Hot Talk 1080 KOTK.